Welcome to A Flock of Donkeys, with your host, Adam Emmert.
Is he half, like, cowboy, half Japanese? Nope. Like, who is this guy?
And Jared Tim.
Do you imagine John Elway riding Thunder? I love Thunder.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Flock of Donkeys, your Seahawks and Broncos podcast with a West Coast bias. Coming at you today from a soggy Missoula, Montana, I'm your co-host, Seahawks fan, Adam Emmert. The man across the table from me is the man that makes a plain blue t-shirt look just as plain as it looks, Jared Tim.
Isn't this color offensive?
It is a little offensive, man. That's like Carolina electric blue.
I got three of these shirts for $20.
It's not even.
And this is the worst one.
It's not even Broncos blue, Jared.
No, it's not.
What, did you buy those at like a Chinese labor sweatshop like for three for $20? Like,
fuck off, dude. I'm having a good day. I'm happy.
You were having a good day.
I am.
Yeah.
I am. I'm not going to let the color of my own t-shirt bum me out today. I'm doing all right.
I thought it was me who was bumming you out.
That's a given.
Okay. That's fair.
So let me ask you a question.
Oh, right out of the gate. I didn't even get to announce the beer we're drinking today.
Oh, well, give me a second.
Okay.
How's it feel to be one of the two elite teams in the NFL? One of only two.
Jared,
there are only two.
Jared, I'm so fucking proud that a button's about to pop off my shirt right now.
If you
I
had
don't
a
even
button.
Have buttons on my shirt. That's
maybe
how
you'll pop
proud
a nipple off.
Dude, that'd be pretty sweet, you
or
know?
Or not.
Why not?
That shit would probably hurt, and then it'd probably, you know, create a rash
would
as it, your shirt went over the top
would
of it
hurt
all
more,
day.
Would it hurt more than having your finger chopped off inside of your glove, and when you pulled your hand out of the glove, the finger did not follow?
Ronnie Lott would say he didn't even feel it.
No, probably not.
All right, that was my question.
It feels great, Jared. It really does. I mean, it's a legitimate question, and you're right about the Broncos and the Seahawks being the top two teams in the league via the eye test number one. Now, One thing that surprised me a little bit is I got on Football Outsiders yesterday, and that's Aaron Schatz's site, and he is the one that does all the advanced metrics and advanced stats. And he has that DVOA stat. And basically, it's defensive value, something adjusted. Anyways, it ranks a team, and it takes into account the defense that they're playing.
Okay.
And there are two teams that are within 0.4 percentage points within one another, and that's the Seahawks and Broncos.
Really?
And it's around 64%. Now, the next team is the Kansas City Chiefs, and they're at about 38%.
Wow. You know,
so there's
that's a big jump. And we've talked about it numerous times about how – your guys' defense versus our offense is just one of those things that's going to be incredible to kind of see how they mold throughout the season. And if this ends up being a Super Bowl game, it's a worrisome one for both of us.
Well, it's interesting.
It's incredibly
interesting. The Broncos have by far the number one offense, and the Seahawks have by far the
number one
defense.
Yeah, and I think even the stats prove that on both sides.
Oh, absolutely. Points per game. That's the stat to me. Mm-hmm. That is the stat to me. And then the second thing that, you know, jumps off the page is your guys' defense isn't exactly terrible.
No.
And our offense,
we're number one in the in the rushing defense, actually, so that's nice.
And our offense is number
Not
four
bad.
In points per game. So
there's so many tangibles to both of these teams that will match up well, I think. You know, and the obvious one is our offense versus your guys' defense. But on the flip side of that, your offense versus our defense, I mean, I think that would be an incredible game. And it's our two teams, and then there's the rest of the NFL.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm
how weird is that? How random is that?
It's incredibly weird. I love it.
Yeah.
What I'm hoping for is that some of these other teams will build some more chemistry. You know, the Chiefs, the Dolphins, maybe even some of these NFC teams to kind of figure it out again. Let's get rolling and create some more competition.
Right.
Because, you know, it's like those past years where we've been alone in the AFC West.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we won with an 8-8 Tebow team, backed into the playoffs, and it was terrible. I don't want that. I love competition. And, you know, the difference between the great teams in the NFL and the bad teams, it's really not that much.
Unless you're the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Unless you're Jacksonville. They're a different story.
Yeah, but everybody else.
Even when I say, oh, no, that dude sucks, no NFL player sucks.
No.
They're all fucking awesome.
No, I remember the idea of a professional athlete actually being putrid is one of those things where, you know, yes, I will say it, but that's in terms compared to the other professional athletes. I played at a roommate when I was 19, back when I was spry. And, you know, and at that time I was actually an okay basketball player. You know, I am very white, so I can't jump, but it's not like, you know, he wasn't white either, but he was a backup point guard for WSU, Washington State University. Had blown out his knee, never played again for them. We went out and played one-on-one one time. One time.
And that was enough for you.
And he ran around me like I was a traffic cone.
Oh, man.
So that's a backup point guard on a, you know, NCAA after team that after he'd blown out his knee. And he beat me like a redheaded stepchild. And
yep.
So the level of talent that it takes to just make an NFL roster and be on that 56-man roster is insane.
It is. You know, my kind of run-in with that a similar story like that, I'll make this quick, is I used to play baseball with this kid, Bo Bardic. He went to West High School, and then he went over to the East Coast to play college football. Mm-hmm. When you play catch with this kid with a football after baseball practice, it fucking hurt, dude.
Yeah.
Like, he was right on the money. He was a hell of a quarterback, but he was like a Division II quarterback.
Right.
At best, and that was it, and he didn't even start.
Isn't that
you're
insane?
Like, wow, like just the, you know, the credibility of these athletes, especially in the professional level, especially in football, is just unbelievable. So these guys are all good, but they're just not as good as the Broncos and the Seahawks.
And that's what it boils down to. There's just two teams that have a larger amount of depth than anybody else. They have a system that's been in place for a couple of years now, some continuity that they're starting to build off
of. Yeah, and that's a lot of player-coach chemistry also, mm-hmm. You know, and the whole team chemistry.
Yeah, exactly. And just the whole idea that there's a great mix between veteran players and young players mm-hmm. on both teams. They're both teams in their absolute window right now, in the peak of their window. And that's
it's exciting to watch.
it's very exciting to watch. So, well, with all that, Jared, I'm going to tell you about the beer that we're drinking today, and then we're going to get into some donkey spit. But the beer we're drinking today is from Bear Republic, an independent brewery since 1995. They are based out of Healdsburg, California. It's the beer that we're drinking is the Pete Brown Brown, and it's a tribute ale to apparently one of their employees. But we'll review that more in the beer segment.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's okay. There's something
it's
about
not the
it.
Best brown. It's because we have some good brown ales to compare it to up here, I believe.
Yeah. So I'm gonna drink the shit out of this before the beer review, so I can put my finger on what it is on this beer that.
All right. I'm looking forward to seeing what you come up with there.
Yeah, but this is gonna be bullshit. You know that.
Well, duh. That's 95% of the shit that comes out of your mouth.
So that's true. If you wanted any crap from me, you just scrape my teeth. Like that's pretty much how that goes. But. So, Jared, we'll start out with some donkey spit. You know, what we're lucky to have here today, you know, halfway through the segment, we're going to bring on Jacob Dearlove. He's a fellow Broncos fan and a writer. He does a contributor to Sports Rants, does some good stuff. Smart guy.
We're going to have him on the podcast.
And he's going to be on the podcast here in just a bit, so stay tuned for that, folks.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go over a couple of things, some things that I saw, and then basically when he comes on, you know, I as much as anybody, want another Broncos fan's perspective. So, sure. I got some questions for him. We'll review some stuff, see what he thinks. You know, he's a very knowledgeable guy as far as football goes. And, mm-hmm. you know, we'll give you guys – I know we've pointed it out once before.
And even though he lives in Canada, he understands there's four downs, not just three.
Yeah, you know, and that the field's not doesn't need to be that wide.
Right.
But we'll give you some contact information for him as far as his blog and where to kind of read some of his material. So
for sure.
But, I mean, let's dive into this.
Donkey spit, giddy up.
Yeah. So – there are a couple of things that the Broncos this year are just doing on historical numbers. Like we're setting, mm-hmm. we're on the verge of setting records left and right. You know, Peyton Manning's got 12 touchdowns, mm-hmm. which is through the first three games, which is a record. He's actually got more touchdowns than 29 other NFL teams. this is unbelievable. He's got no interceptions, not a single one.
So if you were to tally up the amount of touchdown scores by the entire team, he has more that's
than 29 other football teams.
That's impressive.
That is impressive. And it's one thing we're going to talk about later, too, when Jacob comes on is, you know, what is causing this rejuvenation for Peyton Manning? You know, I have my own opinion. I'm sure everybody else does. But I think there's a lot fueling this guy right now. And I think it shows. And I think he's got some chemistry, some really good receivers who he's on the same page with. Motherfucker. But, you know, Peyton Manning has been so incredible out of the play action, too. He's actually, in this game against the Raiders, he was 8-for-8 with 155 yards and 3 touchdowns on play action.
8-for-8 with 153 yards on play
155
action? 155
with 3 touchdowns.
Sorry, I didn't mean to
cheat
him those 2 yards.
Don't chip him 2 yards, you douche.
Well, play action, as we've seen, is one of the more dangerous elements that you can add to an offense if you run the ball.
If you're running the ball. And
now, you guys don't run the ball a ton, but what that says to me, that 8-for-8... Mm-hmm. is that you guys must run the ball effectively enough for teams to legitimately respect it.
And it kind of seems
like... Or Peyton
like,
Manning's just a god.
He is a god, and you could see the way that he commanded the offense. And one thing that I've been noticing is as this season goes on compared to last year, he actually audibles a little bit less. And I think this is because Adam Gase gets the plays in right after the ball is down. Mm-hmm. He has another play in. Mm-hmm. And what I think Peyton Manning audibling less has to do with is Adam Gase being on the same page as him, and they are basically in the same football head. They know exactly what play they want to run. And so they call it, they get the right play, and then if Peyton Manning sees some sort of defensive shift, that's when he audibles. But mm-hmm. they know exactly what plays that they should be running.
So is there just like one giant football head that, or maybe
it's
that's
a bubble.
Just, or
it's a bubble that connects them both by a string.
So it's like a football cloud, like the internet.
They're on the cloud.
I just thought maybe Peyton Manning's forehead was big enough to include both their brains in there.
That's a football brain. Yeah, maybe he does. Yeah. Telepathically, they're just doing this shit. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, you know, we are the only team with over 100 points this season so far in the first three games. We have 127. That's historically the most through three games. The next most, mm-hmm. I think we all remember this team, the 2009 Saints. They had 120.
Yeah, they were okay.
They were okay.
Yeah, they were doing a pinch.
Yeah, you know, this is our 14th straight regular season win. This is also our second game with over 500 yards of total offense. And again, we only gave up 49 rushing yards.
49?
And 22 of those came from Terrell Pryor on one run.
So
we stuffed it.
Darren McFadden did nothing.
No, he didn't. And I think one of the things that I talked
about. Well, can we count those yards that Terrell Pryor had, considering he doesn't remember one of them?
Yeah, that's hilarious. When I found that out, well, I mean, it's not funny. It's not funny to get concussed during a game. But when he comes out, he's like, I don't remember the game. Wesley Woodyard just knocked him out.
He knocked his memory out of his body.
Done. He didn't even remember the game, which is probably good. You know, I mean, okay, but Terrell Pryor didn't really play that bad.
Not at all. I think he's a viable quarterback in this league at this point.
Even Gruden said he was doing okay. You got to remember, this is a team that since 2003, this is their 15th different quarterback and their 7th different head coach since 2003. That's a mess.
That's a hot mess.
You know, he did have 281 passing yards. 75 of those came on one play, which, mm-hmm. you know, Duke and DRC kind of collided a little bit. And
sure.
You know, Denarius Moore is pretty quick. You're just not going to catch him.
Well, it's a professional roster. They're going to rack up a few yards.
Exactly. That's going to happen, especially when we're putting up 37 points, which we should have had more, but we had that sack fumble down in the red zone. And then, you know, we had a fumble, which was on our side of the ball. But mm-hmm. A couple of pluses that I really saw on our defense is, I mean, mainly the rushing. Our rushing defense is incredible. And this will help us out next week when we play LeSean McCoy. If we can keep him inside the tackles, that's going to benefit us in every way. Mm-hmm. Kayvon Webster came in for Tony Carter, who is supposed to be okay. He was injured early on in the game. But Kayvon Webster is a guy we've been high on for a long time. Champ Bailey loves him. And, you know, he's ahead of Omar Bolden on the depth chart now. He was our 90th pick in the draft. And he actually led South Florida in tackles his senior season last year as a cover corner.
Wow.
And he blew up a couple of people yesterday. You saw him lay the wood on a couple of dudes. So, you know, Kayvon Webster is a guy that I'm incredibly excited about. Wesley Woodyard just tracked everybody down. He's got some speed. You saw that closing speed on Terrell Pryor on that one play.
Yeah.
You know, he closed out on him quick. Robert Ayers is finally showing up. You know, after five seasons being a first-round pick, he's leading our team with three sacks.
I have a quick question for you.
Go ahead.
I heard one of the beat writers for the, I believe it's the Denver Post, get on Colin Cowherd today, or maybe it was yesterday. And he basically proclaimed that the most important player, other than Peyton Manning, obviously, on that Broncos team, the guy they could ill afford to lose the most, is Wesley Woodyard.
It's absolutely him. He calls the defensive plays. He calls the audibles. He is the center of the communication on defense.
And he plays nearly every defensive snap, too. So
he played every defensive snap this last game. So good call on that one. He actually played every single one.
Gotcha. So when does your Wesley Woodyard poster come in the mail?
I told you, what was it, yesterday or 2 days ago, that he is my new man crush and quite possibly my favorite Denver Bronco at this point.
That was shocking to me, to be honest.
Yeah, well, he's been around our team for a long time. He worked his way up from being an undrafted guy. He was a special teams guy. Then he became a captain early on. So he's this vocal leader that everybody just respects. And now this is the third different position on defense we played him at, and he has excelled at every single one of them. It's tough to not like a guy like this. He's well-spoken in his interviews. He's never a problem. He doesn't do anything wrong. He plays his ass off, and he plays awesome.
He doesn't get drunk on a Friday, run his truck into a tree, and dig a hole with
the truck
tires.
They do that shit in California.
Oh, okay.
We don't do that in Denver.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Yeah. No, we just try to buy guns and get speeding tickets.
Right.
But, yeah, Wesley Woodyard, he is the guy that, I can't help but take my eyes off when I'm watching the defense. Mm-hmm. You know, him and Duke are incredibly exciting to watch. But, I mean, it's our entire defense and our defensive tackles. I remember saying this about the run game before we played the Raiders. I was like, if we can keep Darren McFadden inside the tackles mm-hmm. and keep him from running outside, we're going to stuff the run. And that's exactly what they did. And so, you know, another stellar performance on defense as far as a run goes.
Gotcha.
And I guess a couple other things that stood out is just this is a statistical genius of a game, I guess. You know, Peyton Manning was 32 of 37 for 374 yards and 3 touchdowns.
He missed 5 passes. What is he doing out there? What a bomb.
Yeah,
I'm sure
he'd love to have all 5 back.
Yeah, that's terrible. I can't believe he did that. Where's Brock? Get him in there.
They wouldn't let him come in. I remember looking at him on the sideline, and he took his little radio fucking thing off of his hip. Still didn't get going in the game.
That's something I actually want to bring up when we get Jacob on the line here. Actually just got a text from him. It sounds like he'll be ready here in just a few minutes.
All right, cool.
So, but the fact that Peyton Manning just pretty much refused to come out of the game like a stubborn donkey. I mean, mule. I mean, like an old quarterback who wants to play the whole time.
Yeah, I don't know if it's so much that, because even during his press conferences, he said, they asked him about why he didn't come out of the game and why Brock didn't take a couple reps. He goes, whatever the coach decides, you know, that's what we're going to go with. So yeah. He made it sound like it was John Fox's call. And I like him not coming out of the game, especially since he's not going to take a sack late in the game, because he's basically either we're going to run the ball or we're going to have a quick 3-step drop throw it.
So
there's
they
no
didn't,
risk to him whatsoever.
They didn't
late in the game.
Choose to leave Peyton Manning in the game based on a game of paper, rock, scissors, like the running backs and how they might get a touchdown carry.
That was also bullshit. That also did not happen.
Didn't happen, huh?
They played paper, rock, scissors.
Yeah.
But it was every intention Ronnie Hillman was going to finish that drive.
Okay.
Every intention, man. So, you know, that's something fun for ESPN to kind of throw around a little bit, but it's stupid.
Okay, but here's the thing, though. Is it really bad if they did do it that way?
Yeah.
Why?
I want the coaches to have control over our young running backs on who gets to play.
What if the coaches said, you know what, you guys, you figure it out. You decide which one you want to do.
Yeah, that's cute in high school. This is professional, man. You don't lose control over these teams. You have got to have control over these.
How's that losing control? You're giving. It's like raising a kid. If you have a kid that's capable of making a good decision, then you go ahead and you give them the ability to make decisions so that they learn how to make decisions. So if you've got 3 running backs there and they're trying to decide, and you know that these 3 guys are good guys and they'll come up with a good way to figure that out, doesn't that just add a little fun to the game? And isn't that the point, is to try to keep a little joy in the game so that you stay inspired?
But I think when you're up by 21 points, there's already quite a bit of joy going around.
Well,
and
exactly.
I guess my counter to this is that in this game, if you're letting players make this kind of decision, it kind of means that you're not taking it as seriously. And our coaches, one thing that I know that they want to do is they want to take every single game seriously the entire 4 quarters. Mm-hmm. This is what's making us a disciplined team. Coaches make these calls, and I like that. You know, in high school, sure, you know, that can be fine. But I like my coaches making these kinds of decisions. Do not take these decisions out of my coach's hands. That's how I am. This is professional football, you know?
I don't know.
Maybe Pete Carroll, that's fine. But,
well,
you know, we have a very disciplined team, and that's the way they want to keep it. And I think the main reason that John Fox was a little bit offended that Ronnie Hillman actually came out and said this, because it kind of seems like we weren't taking it as seriously. They're playing paper, rock, scissors to see who gets to go in the game. That's not the message we want to send. You know, we don't want to sound like we're lackadaisical in the 4th quarter. We're still trying to beat you guys the best that we can. You know, we're not taking it easy on the sideline. This is business when we're on the football field, and I like that. I like the discipline.
Here's the thing. I don't believe that fun and taking something seriously are mutually exclusive. I think those are 2 things that can go hand in hand. I think you can take something extremely seriously and have fun while doing it and joking around a little bit. So it wouldn't have bothered me if it was. I didn't think it was a big deal one way or the other. But
well, I mean, I think it's pretty ridiculous to think that after Ronnie Hillman had such a – I mean, this was a phenomenal running drive for him. He had great runs. Our offensive line was blocking so well. The fact that we would have taken him out of the game to give the touchdown to somebody else is just stupid. You know, so the fact that it was left up to a paper, rock, scissors on the sideline, I don't even know how this story really even garnered – any attention, to be honest with you.
Oh, just because it's something that'd be easy to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's
really
what that
is. That's fine. It's just, it is what it is.
Okay. I just thought I'd ask.
But, you know, there's a couple other things I want to talk about before we, well, you know, we're having fun because we're beating the shit out of teams. Peyton's smiling, everybody's smiling, but, you know, leave the coaching decisions in the coach's hands.
Sure.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
One thing I like that Gruden said is that this offense is exhausting to watch. And it is exhausting to watch because we have so many different wide receiver formations that they didn't know how to cover them all. There were guys, I mean, look at his stats. He completed 32 of 37 passes. Guys were wide open all over the field. We have so many different combinations that defenses have to prepare for. I think it's going to be tough on any secondary, including elite ones.
That's good because you've got a pretty good one you're going to have to face in your own division in the Kansas City Chiefs. So
they are good. And I'm looking forward to that game. That's a team that I think their chemistry is only going to get better, and I think they're going to be a tough game for us.
I'm telling you,
I'm
Jared,
glad.
When my top five power rankings come out here, I'm telling you, the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be up there.
I got them on mine, too. I got them there.
I only got
two NFC teams at this point because I think they're – well, we can talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as far as the Raiders game, that's pretty much all I wanted to do. You know, McFadden had that perfect passing touchdown.
Wow. What a throw, right?
What a perfect throw to Marcell Reese,
if
man.
If that's not on Dilfer's dimes, I don't know what's going
on.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't see that, but it better be.
That
better be a Dilfer dime. But, you know, as far as the Raiders game goes, you know, we're starting to set some marks historically. Our receivers are catching a hell of a lot of balls. So one thing that they were talking about before the season is having three receivers over 1,000 yards. I think if everybody stays healthy, that's a possibility. But one thing I'm a little more impressed about is that we have three receivers that could each potentially catch 100 passes.
Well, the way you guys are
playing.
Which is
unbelievable. And Julius Thomas, I don't know if he's going to drop a pass. Dude's got hands. He's a smart football player. He's coming along just like everybody was hoping he would, and I'm just happy to see it. You know, the guy stuck his injuries through. I've been talking about him since OTAs. There's a lot of Broncos fans who have been, and I'm pretty excited about him.
Yeah,
too.
I was actually surprised that you didn't buy stock in the company, Orange Julius, after he started to come on.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that restaurant even exists anymore.
Yeah, I think it might, but it's probably – I think it was bought out by Dairy Queen or some shit like that, and, you know, they're like – one and the same now.
Oh, I feel you. Okay.
I could be completely wrong, but I think it's one of those KFC, you know, A&W things where they're in the same building and they offer both fucking things. I don't know.
I feel you.
But okay. I know there's still one around. I think there's one in our mall or some kind of stuff like that.
So when you look at this Raider game as a whole, you did exactly what you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah, it's the same thing with your guys' Jacksonville game. You know, this was a lesser team that's trying to do some things. They really don't have an identity formed yet. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we beat them like we should have.
Yeah.
You know, we still made some mistakes, but, you know, we won this game. We came out with relatively no injuries. You know, Duke left, but he just kind of re-aggravated that swollen ankle, so we just pulled him out.
Right.
Tony Carter apparently was walking around with a walking boot in his hand. He wouldn't put it on after the game.
Nice.
So I think he'll be fine, but we got depth to cover these guys for right now, and I'm looking forward to playing the Eagles.
Well, very good. Well, just got another text here from Jacob. He is ready to rock and roll.
All right, let's bring him on.
Hold on here for just 1 second, folks, and we'll bring him on. Okay, folks, we have here on the phone Jacob Dearlove, a fellow Broncos fan here for you.
Oh yeah,
Jared.
He's a fellow Broncos fan, Canucker too.
I know you've been jonesing for that. He's a really great guy. Writes some good stuff. He has the one article up here on NFL Rants that you should check out. But also check him out on Twitter at Jacob Dearlove, and it's DEARLOVE. Always tweeting out a lot of great Broncos news and helpful insights and things like that. So welcome to the show, Jacob.
Thank you. Good to be on here.
All right. So this is the first time you've done any sort of podcast, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Nice. All right. Well, I mean, let's just get started, man. Is there anything that kind of jumps out to you as far as the Broncos go that you kind of wanted to discuss at all?
I think the one thing that I'm still trying to get a handle on this year is the running back situation. I know that's kind of a hot topic.
It's actually one of the questions I wanted to ask you about. That's actually one of the big questions I kind of wanted to ask you about, you know, because our fumbles are kind of a concern, and we do have a three-man rotation. So, I mean, between our three running backs, how do you feel about these guys?
I think Ball's been kind of given a bit more flack than he should have taken. I know he's a young guy, and I know the fumbles weren't necessarily great plays on his part, but I don't know. First of all, I thought the fumble the other night, I thought they were going to challenge it personally. I didn't get a great look at it, but I didn't think it was a fumble.
To be honest with you, I kind of agree with that. I didn't think it was a fumble either, but I think it was at a point in the game where we just said fuck it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was the situation too. I like Moreno. I like what he's been doing in the run game. I don't have a ton of confidence in Hillman though. Other than that, I don't know. I think they're all kind of at the same point in their game where you can't really choose a starter at this point, so I think the running back by committee at this point is probably the best plan.
Yeah.
So is it purely the ball security thing with Hillman that bothers you, or is it pass protection, or what's the real concern you have there with Hillman?
Well, I mean, considering Peyton Manning's our only chance of winning a Super Bowl, I just can't. I don't want Hillman back there protecting our prize possession.
You know, I agree with that. There's a lot of protection issues that kind of come along with Ball and Hillman because they're so young. I said this before the season started. I said I wouldn't be offended if Knowshon Moreno was our starter coming in. He's great in pass protection, and he's the only one of the three who hasn't fumbled the ball yet. And his running has become way more patient. You know, he's got a lot more patience now. And at this point, I think he's really starting to justify his first-round pick at this point in his career.
I really do, and I think it's something that kind of started up last year, even in that Ravens game where he kind of had that breakout game last year. I think that was where he really starts seeing his progression in his run game.
Yeah, and he looks explosive, you know, and he actually looks like he's running with a lot of power, too. So I think he's a good, well-rounded back. He did drop a ball last game, but I think he's good coming out of the backfield, too, and I think he's everything we wanted him to be when we drafted him, you know, back in the day.
See, it's funny listening to you two Bronco dork chops go back and forth about this because you guys have so much consternation over your running back situation. And honestly, I mean, you guys are a passing team, first and foremost. Peyton Manning thrown for more touchdowns than anybody else in league history in those first three games. Jacob, how impressed are you with the rejuvenated old sheriff, Peyton Manning?
I'm blown away by his performance so far this year. Honestly, I can't believe it. I used to hate Peyton Manning when he played for the Colts just because of what he would do to the Broncos.
Oh, do you remember those 2 years straight where they would kill us? Or we would beat them because he would be benched in week 17 season. And they'd come out in the first round of the playoffs and just destroy us?
Yeah, I couldn't stand the guy back then. But now, I'll be honest, I ordered a jersey. It's on the way.
Nice.
I'm a full-blown Peyton Manning fan now, I guess. So.
Good for you. So am I. And this is one of the most impressive things that I've ever seen a quarterback do. And so I guess my question for you is there's a lot of opinions that go on about this. What do you think has caused Peyton Manning's rejuvenation at this point? And why do you think he's playing so much better or not so much, but better now in Denver than he ever did with the Colts?
I think one thing that you got to consider is just like the weapons he has around him. I mean, like Demaryius Thomas, Eric Decker, Wes Welker, and then the emergence of Julius Thomas. I mean, to have four guys around you that you can pretty much do anything with, along with his smarts back there behind the center. When he gets down there and he sees what's going on in the defense, and you've got four different weapons around you that you can move around, it's pretty difficult not to have this kind of success, I think.
Right, and you can't cover them all with those kind of weapons. You kind of got to pick one to double team, which Demaryius Thomas is kind of garnering most of the double teams.
Well, yeah, he's a freaking monster. The guy, the guy's the size of like four ship brick houses, man. They're like fucking gigantic. Of course,
Demaryius,
you gotta put at
least
two guys.
Yo, he's one of those guys that can run after the catch too. He's got a lot of size. He's tough to bring down.
Yeah, when he went down in that game against Oakland, I was freaking out.
Yeah, he's a big time factor in what our offense does. You know, he also brings the safeties back, which is going to allow us to run the ball all game long too, which is kind of what we did this last time. But he keeps those safeties honest, playing at least, you know, 10 to 15 yards deep, you know, minimum. They're never creeping up. They're rarely, when they do blitz like Charles Woodson did last time, we went out into the flats to Julius Thomas, scored a touchdown.
All right, so you guys, what do you think about your guys' matchup of your receivers against the Philly secondary and that Philly defense as a whole, really?
Personally, I think we're gonna have a heyday against Philly's defense. I mean, just seeing what Alex Smith was able to do last week with a guy like Donnie Avery. I mean, toss a guy in there like Wes Welker, who's the same type of player with some actual talent. And
I agree. I completely agree. I mean, this Philly defense, there's a lot of new pieces. They lost a lot. I think their chemistry is still gonna be low. I don't think this is going to end with, you know, I was talking about earlier, the different kind of combinations that we run with all of our receivers. You know, John Gruden said it was exhausting to watch all the different formations that we have with these guys. So I don't think Philly's really going to be able to keep up with that.
So
yeah,
that's
totally
interesting.
Agree on that one.
That's interesting. Now you've got the two high powered offenses going against one another, the two probably quickest offenses in the NFL at this point. Do you think that the Philly offense can actually hold up in the Mile High air going into this, Jacob? I mean, that's a lot of plays to run, and they're running it so fast. I mean, how could you have the stamina to do that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I actually hadn't considered that, but I mean, up in the Mile High, you hear about a lot of offenses coming and defenses coming in there and just getting, especially the defenses who come in and play against the Broncos, and they're just worn out by the end of the game, right? So I just don't think that Chip Kelly's offense, I don't think they'll be able to sustain it over the game. I mean, you could even see in the opening Monday Nighter, fell off in the second half. And, I mean, that's not at mile high. And that's against the Redskins defense, who isn't nearly as strong as the Broncos.
I agree. And, you know, I think – I don't know what you think the key is to this game as far as our defense goes. I'll ask you about that. But what I think we really need to do is we need to curb their rushing game, which we've done. We are number one in defense in the NFL against the rush. And I think Darren McFadden, all of his big runs came up the middle. And when I watched the Eagles games, LeSean McCoy, his big runs come up the middle. We're incredibly good in our front seven. What do you think our chances are of stopping the run on the Eagles since all of their runs are coming up the middle?
I think our success stopping their run honestly is going to hinge on whether or not Duke Iheanacho is going to be able to play. I mean, him and Raheem Morris are really the key to stopping any runs that get to that second level.
Right.
Those guys have been really shutting them down like very well this year, and I just don't know if Iheanacho is not able to go. I don't know if I have that same confidence in Mike Adams back there. I guess he would be the second in line.
Right.
But I do think we can stop the run better than the Chiefs were able to last week. I don't think that McCoy's going to have the same success this week.
I think so, too. And, you know, Mike Vick had 95 yards on the ground also. I think we're going to contain him a little bit better. And I think Terrence Knighton and Kevin Vickerson in the middle, they're going to bottle everything up that comes their way. So if they do get to the secondary, like you said, I mean, having Raheem Moore and Duke Iheanacho back there, that's just a luxury at this point. And I did hear Duke was just fine after the game. He was walking around. We kind of just pulled him because he retweaked that inflamed ankle. So,
well, he's half cowboy, half Japanese. He's freaking amazing. Of course,
awesome.
He's going to be back in the game. But this is your guys' first test against a true read option quarterback at this point, a guy with actual talent that can actually throw and is also fast. So I'm really interested to see how you guys play that. I kind of feel like the book is out on how to defend that read option. I mean, you see Colin Kaepernick struggling to this point in the season, as well as RG3. I'm really curious to see if you guys kind of use that same game plan coming in. What do you think, Jacob, the odds are that you guys are able to kind of contain that?
I think if you look at the success the Broncos had, even in the first preseason game against Colin Kaepernick, I mean, I think we do have a good chance of shutting down that read option. I think it does hinge, though, on the secondary there, just to make sure that they're keeping their eyes on the backfield as well while they're in coverage. I mean, I think that's the key part to shutting down the read option, is really having that secondary with their heads on a swivel and being able to break off the receivers as soon as they see something developing in the rush game, right?
Right. I mean, that's a good point, too. And, you know, if you keep your eyes in the backfield, that's gonna keep you from really biting on that play action, too, which I think is another reason we really got to stop the run, because a lot of that read option, a lot of play action comes with that, too. And so I think if we can stop the run, we can stop the read option. And I think Wesley Woodyard really cancels out that read option because he's so fast to both sidelines. You know, and if we can keep everything in the middle of the field and keep contained and don't let Vic or LeSean McCoy outside the tackles, I think we'll have a lot of success there.
Yeah, I think our linebackers, too. I mean, Irving, Trevathan, and Woodyard are all very good in coverage, and they're very quick guys getting vertically and horizontally across the field. So I think we're pretty well set for that read option there.
I think so, too. And, you know, Vic was sacked 6 times in the last game. He gets sacked a lot.
So
his offensive line's still a problem.
Over under on how many quarters until Michael Vick is legitimately dead on the field? Like, is it like, you know, 3.25 quarters? Like, that'd be 3.5 quarters before Irving comes in, like the giant orc that he is, and just, like, kills him.
I think we're going to see Nick Foles in the third quarter to open up.
That's fair. I mean, Woodyard did make Terrell Pryor forget the entire game. You know, I don't know if you saw that, but Terrell Pryor said he does not remember the game after Woodyard laid the smackdown on him.
Yeah, I saw that tweet. He's like, I don't really remember much, but I'm sorry, Oakland Nation or whatever he said. That was pretty funny.
I was entertained. But, I mean, if there's anything, what else do you want to talk about? Is there anything else that kind of jumps off the page at you as far as Philadelphia goes and how we should defend them or play them on offense?
I think the one thing that I'm a little nervous about, just because of last year's, the game that I don't want to speak about from last year,
I hear you.
You mean when Raheem Moore blew the entire game in the Ravens beat you guys and
hey,
you had to go home
and cry
yourself
Raheem Moore
into your pillow? That's the game?
Yeah, that's the one that I didn't want to talk about. But
oh, okay. Sorry to rub that in. Except I'm not.
it's forgiven, I guess. But I don't know. Like I just don't know about DeSean Jackson. I mean, he's such an explosive player, and I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if Champ's going to be back in the game this week. But I mean, if he is, who's going to be on Jackson? Do you think? What do you guys think? Do you think it'll be Cromartie then?
I think Dominic Rogers Cromartie will probably be on him, to be honest with you. But I'm a little bit worried about DeSean Jackson too, because Denarius Moore had a big game for the Raiders against us. He was tough to cover, and I think DeSean Jackson's going to be that very similar player. And yeah, without Champ Bailey being in there, I think we put Dominic Rogers Cromartie on him to go with Chris Harris. And then depending on if Tony Carter's back or not, you know, we'll go with Kayvon Webster in the slot. This guy, I don't know if you saw some of those hits he was laying, but I'm pretty excited about Kayvon Webster.
Oh, yeah. He laid some big hits out there. I was really impressed with his, that one right at the start of the game. I was really impressed on that one.
Yeah.
You know, you guys have talked about Champ not being back for this game and how that worries you a little bit. I think that actually helps you guys out when you look at covering a guy like a DeSean Jackson. I mean, look where Champ struggled last year. He shut down pretty much everybody until Torrey Smith came into the game with it, you know, right, as a speed burner. And that's exactly who DeSean Jackson is. I mean, he's lightning quick. I like your guys' matchup with DRC on him way better.
Yeah, that's where I was heading with that topic. I mean, until I remember that Champ might not even be playing. But, I mean, I would be much more comfortable with Champ in the game if he was covering, say, Avant or Riley Cooper. I think he could easily shut down either of those two, right? So
I think another thing that we're really missing without Champ being in the game is, you know, when you talk about how big team chemistry is in the NFL, when you're missing that kind of a veteran, that kind of leadership presence on the field as far as chemistry goes, I think your defense is going to struggle to find its identity in the passing game. And, you know, we've given up a lot of yards. Of course, we're forcing teams into the passing game. But I think Champ Bailey, even if he has lost a step or two, which I actually do think he has at this point, I think from a communication standpoint, he really is still an asset.
Yeah, I do believe that, too. And that's why it would be really nice to get him back this week. Or for sure, I heard that if he's not back this week, he'll for sure be back next week. So I'm looking forward to having him back in the lineup for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So I got one more question basically for you. Is what is your overall take on the AFC West, you know, where it's been as opposed to where it's heading? How do you feel about our division?
I mean, I don't think KC is the team that they're built up to be at this point. I mean, I think they are definitely the best competition in the division.
Right.
Hands down, I think they've got to step up on Oakland as well as San Diego. But I don't think that KC is going to challenge for the division title. I just don't think that any of those teams are ready to do that against the Broncos yet.
Right.
But I think KC has a very good chance at getting that wild card position. But other than that, I think Oakland's going to continue to struggle down the stretch. And I think that the Rivers rejuvenation, if you want to call it, in San Diego isn't going to continue for very long.
You know, he at least he's got a good coach this year. You know, Mike McCoy's down there, so I think that's a plus.
Well, I'm just glad to see Philip Rivers making the mad face, like, for game after game again. That's really fun. And chewing out refs and all that
stuff.
Yeah,
he is a competitor. I think Kansas City, they'll only get better. Their defense is pretty good, and I think with Alex Smith being able to run that kind of efficient offense, I think, just like you said, you know, they'll get a wild card. But they're definitely not ready to compete for a division, especially against a well-oiled Broncos team. So I was just getting your perspective, and I think you're right on all
those. I have one question regarding the Chiefs for you, Jacob, and it's one that actually got under Jared's skin a little bit in the last podcast. And, you know, I asked, how does that Broncos receiving core and the Broncos passing game stack up when you guys come up against an elite secondary? And I honestly believe that Kansas City Chief defense, as well as their secondary, is really, really good. How do you see you guys matching up with them on that level?
You're asking how Peyton Manning's going to match up against an elite secondary?
Don't make me sound as stupid as I am.
That is dumb. Good answer.
All right. I'll wear that one. That was a dumbass question, and you're 100% right. I'm 0% right. That was
fucking awesome. Thank you for putting him in his place. He really needs that a time or two.
Yeah, well, with that said, I think we're going to wrap this up. Get on to the beer review here.
Oh, man.
Do you have anything else there, Jared?
No, Jacob.
I don't have anything else for now. It was great being on the show, though. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, man. We'd like to have you again here at some point down the stretch. Maybe talk about how the season's going, if you wouldn't mind doing that.
All right. Sounds great. I'd love to do that. And I'd love to come back on after Peyton Manning tears apart that Chiefs secondary.
Oh, it's on like Donkey Kong.
That's when you're coming on is after that game for sure.
That's happening then. Okay, we'll make that happen. Jacob, thank you so much. A great time. We'll have you on again, and have yourself a good night, buddy.
Yeah, good perspective, man. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot. Have a good day.
You too.
All right, folks, stay tuned. We're going to come right back here with the beer review. We'll see you guys here in just a second. All right, we're back, folks. Time for the beer review.
I like the beer review.
Collecting myself after Jacob tore me down at the end of the last segment.
Rightfully
there.
So, man. You totally deserve that, especially after that dumbass fucking question.
Deserved or got? Those are two different things.
Both.
You're an asshole. All right.
Duh.
Well,
breaking news, folks.
The beer that we're reviewing today, folks, is from Beer Republic. It is their tribute.
Bear Republic.
Yeah, Bear Republic. It's the tribute ale for Pete Brown. It's the tribute ale brown. And for some reason, the number 27 is on there, too. I'm not exactly
Steve right. Atwater.
That's not why it's on there. But, you know, this beer, I said at the beginning, there was something about it that was a little off to me and that I would come up
What's
with it.
What's a little off to you about this beer, Adam?
Well, you know, what happened is I drank more of the beer. It tasted better.
There you go. Isn't that always how it goes?
Well, I hope it does. That's exactly how it ought to go. But, you know, they say that this beer here, it has
you mean this beer here?
This beer here has a lot of golden brown sugars and sweet molasses. And, you know, it's got a little more bite than your regular brown, I think is what it is about it. I was expecting a little smoother.
Okay. And browns usually are a little bit smoother. We got one down at the Bitterit Brewing Company. Mm-hmm. That's really good.
Yeah, make another reference. Nobody will understand.
I know. Okay. But it's got a little bit of spice, but this one's got a little bit more to it. And it is a little different. I really do like it, though. I can be honest with you. I like it. But it's different than what I was expecting from a brown ale.
Well, I think when I said I didn't like it initially compared to where I was now, it's a lot like, say, that you order a Coke and they give you a root beer.
Okay.
You know,
you weren't expecting.
I like root beer, but I wasn't expecting it, you know?
I think it's worth a try, though.
And this
for
beer
sure.
has a little more bite to it than the actual, you know, regular brown that you have. You know, they have some brewmaster notes here on the bottom, which I find kind of funny. They say, keep cold, respect life, give more hugs, make beer, not bombs. And real ale is alive and yeast is good. So
I like it.
I totally subscribe to all of those there. These guys are located down in Healdsburg. Is that
Healdsburg, Healdsburg?
I don't know. That sounds right.
The dude on the front of it has a San Diego hat. So I'm imagining it's maybe in Southern California.
It says it's in Sonoma County, maybe. So wherever that might
that's
be.
That's not Southern California.
Well, I don't know.
Damn it, I'm wrong again.
Yeah. Ha! Eat it. And then it's 6.3 by alcohol content, which that makes me happy because I like my beer with lots of alcohol in it.
What's the drinkability on this?
Now, that's an interesting question.
As far as women goes.
As far as the Chica drinkability scale.
Yep.
I like how this has become a staple, actually.
It is, because when you're buying beer, especially when you're going to a barbecue mm-hmm. or if you're taking a date or your girlfriend or your wife or whatever, you want to make sure that you want to make sure that everybody's
going
to want the beer.
I mean, I don't go on picnics. That'd be fucking lame, but that, I'm just kidding. But,
but you know, like, you know, during the wintertime, winter beers are low on the drinkability scale.
Yeah. This beer, like I said, has a little more bite to it than I had originally anticipated. I give it a 6.
That's exactly what I was going to put it at, actually.
Consensus 6?
Yeah, because I mean, when girls seem to want to go for a brown ale, just like I was when I first mm-hmm. opened it up, I want something smooth.
Yeah.
I think it takes, you know, it's taken us a couple of beers to really get mm-hmm. into the flow of a different kind of tasting brown ale, whereas mm-hmm. I really do like it. I think some of your average women beer drinkers, there are some real women beer drinkers out there. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of them that like darker beers than I do. It's just, it's a taste bud thing. But for your weekend chick beer drinker, I think it's pretty low because they're not going to want to drink enough of these to really get into the flavor of it.
No, I mean, it's not, doesn't fall anywhere close to a cheerleader beer. And so, you know.
No, not even close.
But, you know, this is one of those beers I ended up choosing because I ended up down at Warden's Market downtown Missoula, which is kind of where you can get those specialty beers, because I was looking for a few of the suggestions by our listeners.
So we are trying. We're really trying to get some of these beers. We're going to keep looking, damn it.
I was
so
looking
suggesting.
For some brews from the Mac and Jack Brewery over in Seattle that was suggested to us. And, man, I thought I'd written down your name, brother, who suggested that, and I didn't. I'm sorry.
Suggest again.
But, yeah, keep suggesting. But it was a great suggestion. So ended up with this here. I was in and out of the store within 5 minutes in the freaking parking Nazi police in Missoula.
You know, the meter maid, when that job came open, there were over 300 applicants for the meter maid job.
Are you fucking
kidding
me?
Yeah, these people are fucking on it, dude. Like, if there is a ticket to be given away, they will do it, man. I'm getting a beer or not.
Well, so I park the car. It's parallel parking, which is fine. I get zipped in there, and it's metered parking, which, again, is fine. I look in my ashtray for some coins, which there's a bunch there. And then I looked up, and there's this crazy fucking bum on the sidewalk, like, right next to the car. And I knew the second that I get out, he was going to ask me for fucking money. And I just, this always so goddamn awkward. And
so you would have felt a little weird putting your change in the meter rather than giving it to the dude.
I got nothing left for you, man. I had to pay for my nice car. And it's not even that nice, but, like, you know, my car to, like, park here downtown.
I don't think we can underestimate how awkward this could have been for you.
It could have been super awkward. And so I literally forgot, because I was so rattled by the fact that I was going to have to deal with this bum. I literally forgot to put the change in the meter. So I run down to Warden's, which is a half a block down the street, grab the beer, and I looked around for a little bit, maybe 3 to 4 minutes. And, you know, these were on sale, grabbed them, went to the register, came back, and just as I come back, she's two cars in front of mine marking it with the chalk sock, you know, on the tire to tell if they've moved. And, yeah, as I climb closer to the car, I'm like, oh, sweet, I don't think I got a ticket. There must have been money in the meter still. Wrong.
Okay, so if it was 3 to 4 minutes you were in the store, you got an average of 30 to 45 seconds to get in and get out and be done.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You got to, if you're going to do that, like, you got to be like Usain Bolt sprinting, grab your shit.
They are Nazis here.
You know,
I guess what I'm learning from this is if I ever want to make you super uncomfortable, I'm going to panhandle the shit out of you.
Dress up.
Give me a change, man.
Dress up in raggedy clothes. Be smelly.
I do. This is what I do.
Ask me for money.
Okay.
That's
you will crumble.
I'll just crumple, man. Just crumple. Like Terrell Pryor getting hit by Wesley Woodyard. Just crumple.
And you won't even remember the situation.
Yeah, it was just brutal. So,
yeah, I would like to say on a different note, if any of you are in Missoula, Montana, this coming Saturday, we are having a Montana Brewers Association Brewfest.
Yes, because everybody destination travels to Missoula, Montana the first
weekend
of October.
Fest.
Yeah, or last weekend of September.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, I don't know. You'd be stupid if you didn't, because this is the best time of year here.
You know, fall, they talk about the fall on the East Coast. I think in Missoula, Montana, most places in Montana, I think this is one of the best times of year. And I was more impressed with the Brew Fest from the Montana Brewers Association.
With the Brew Fest?
Yeah, I was impressed.
You got a little rap rolling there?
God, I didn't even realize I did that.
You just rhyme all the time, Jared.
Thanks, Dick.
Yeah, you're welcome, Dick.
But, you know, when I went to this Brew Fest last year, I was more impressed with this Brew Fest than any other one I'd ever been to. We have so many good beers in Montana. I think you guys should at some point make it out here just to try some of them.
Yeah, do it. Yeah, be better at life.
Do it now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Jared, I think that's everything we need to say about the beer. We need to get to some chicken scratch, because I've had way too much fucking donkey shit in my ears so far today. So.
It was good, man. We had a good guest. Donkey spit was good.
So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back with some chicken scratch. Welcome back, folks. Time for some chicken scratch.
You want to know why I like this segment?
Because you can just be an asshole to
me the
entire time?
I can just be a complete dick. I mean, it is the fourth best segment that we do.
Yeah, you keep trying to declare it that way. But
I'm just going to sit here and listen to you make fun of you and then assess some asshole questions.
Yeah, it's like trying to declare the Houston Astros is the best team in baseball constantly and, like, expecting people to believe you. Just not truthful.
As long as I believe me, that's all good.
Yeah, well, that's true. You live your own life pretty damn well. It's just pretty great. But
go ahead, man, what do you got?
Getting to the Seahawks, you know, we went ahead and had the exact type of performance that we ought to have against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and there is a few storylines that came out of this that I definitely thought that we needed to focus on here just a little bit.
Okay.
One of them was you know, the sheer domination of the defense. And yes, we gave up 17 points when it was all said and done.
But that's fine.
But I don't think that was a big deal. The majority of those points came against our twos. But that defensive line, they were just disruptive the whole entire game. I am really stoked about where we're going with that.
You know, I agree with that. Your guys' defense has been so dominant. When you look at the stats, the total yards, scoring defense, you guys are just killing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were talking about this earlier. The Broncos are number one in rushing defense, but nowhere near where you guys' total defense is. Statistically, your guys' secondary is just unbelievable. You're going to shut everybody down.
Yeah.
And you guys manhandled a team that you should have. And that's what a good team does, is they win the games that they need to.
Well, apparently the defense was a little pissed off that they ended up giving up 17 points. The starters were kind of mad at the backups. But
our defense was mad, too.
Look,
it happens.
You know, from
a fan's perspective, it doesn't bother me at all. But that pass rush up the middle was really great. And it wasn't just Michael Bennett, who's been playing out of his mind since he's came over to the Seahawks. I think that might be one of the biggest free agent signings in the entire NFL when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
More than Wes Welker?
I said one of the biggest. Okay. That's like in a consortium of of free agent signings.
All right. No, it is big because his presence has been felt.
Honestly, I would say it's bigger
guys than
Wes Welker, and I'll make the argument this way. Because
Here we go.
With Wes Welker, you guys are better. Of course you're better.
Right.
But really, you guys have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to the receiver position and pass catchers overall, whether it's Orange Julius or Demaryius Thomas or Eric Decker. Now, as far as the Seahawks go, when we went to interior pass rushers, we didn't have another interior pass rusher on that team that was worth a goddamn.
No.
And, you know, bringing in Michael Bennett, I think, is a bigger upgrade for this team, you know, as far as his contribution overall than, say, Wes Welker would be.
Okay. I'll make this very brief.
Yeah, good, because it's the Seahawks. We're not talking about Broncos.
I know. But my counter to that is Wes Welker's ability to read an offense and what he can do, knowing what his outside receivers who can stretch the field can do.
Yeah.
I think there's no slot receiver in the NFL that reads a defense as good as him, so it just opens up a lot for us. You know, we could talk about this later in the season as our matchup is coming.
Absolutely. Yeah, when it gets here.
Yeah, but those are good points.
You know, the other guy that really flashed me on that defensive line was Clinton McDonald.
He's been playing well for a while, it seems like.
It's,
you know?
It's really interesting. We had actually let him go in the offseason, ended up bringing him back right before week one. And his
Was that a ceremonious release?
I don't
you
know.
You like the ceremonious benching to kind of give a guy a little perspective? Is that what you did?
Maybe, because maybe he found this bull rush while he was out there on the free agent wire there for a little bit, because his bull rush was unbelievable in this game. He was just...
It should be against Jacksonville.
It was unreal. He ended up with 5 tackles and a sack and a half. He had a gigantic game from that interior position. I was really, really impressed with that. Meebane also played a good game. Mm-hmm. The linebackers, again, moved very quickly throughout the game. There was no running room for Maurice Jones-Drew. He ended up with 43 yards when it was all said and done.
Yeah, you guys shut down the running game too, but I'm just so impressed with when I see some of these quarterbacks go to drop back against your defense. They look confused from the minute they get the football in their hands.
Well,
they don't know where they're going to go, and they can't figure out where to go because there's nowhere to go.
There's nowhere to go. What is it, like 75% of the earth is covered by water, and the rest of it is covered by the Seattle Seahawks secondary? that's pretty much how that goes, you know?
I'll give you that.
And,
right.
You know, and not only the secondary, but Bobby Wagner with an amazing pick in that game. You know, gets battered up in the air. He bats it back to himself. Diving pick. Unbelievable. He says he has a competition with Sherman now going into this year for leading the team in picks when it's all said and done.
You know, I think he's got an argument there just because of the lack of attempts going to Sherman's side.
Yeah.
You know, what's he going to get thrown out once, twice a game?
Yeah.
What are you going to do with that?
You watch Sherman in this game, and there were 2 attempts to his side of the field where, one, he thought he should have had the interception for sure. You could kind of tell he threw a little hissy fit after the play, but that ball wasn't close enough near him. Henny misfired so badly that there was just no getting to it. But another was an attempt to the end zone, and he should have had that one.
He probably should have had that one, but, you know, that's why he plays defensive back.
Well, yeah. I mean, he used to play receiver when he was back in college.
And doesn't anymore.
No, he doesn't. No, now
I think he picked the right position, though.
Yeah, I
think he made a good decision.
Considering he's the best at it in the game, you betcha.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's anybody you could put above him at this point.
No, there's
I remember in the offseason, this was maybe just a few weeks ago when Darrell Revis said you got to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
Darrell, he did. It was last year.
Yeah, it was taken away.
Yeah, get over it. Yeah, you know, I mean, just as the Champ Baileys of the world or the Daryl Greens of the world mm-hmm. have to kind of give it up,
yeah.
You know, that championship belt of best cover corner, hey, give it up.
Yeah. But
it's Sherman by far, man.
Father Time's undefeated.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's exactly. Basically what's going on there. So you don't think Darrell Revis has made the Tampa Bay Buccaneers world beaters?
I think if I had to pick between Darrell Revis and his absolute prime or Richard Sherman, I'd take Richard Sherman. Mm-hmm. Darrell Revis made some big mistakes when he was in his prime. He wasn't mentally on top of his cover game as Richard Sherman is on every fucking play. He doesn't take a playoff. Darrell Revis would take some ridiculous chances. Richard Sherman just does what he should on every single play, and it's stellar. He is a 5 out of 5 as a cover corner. I mean, I haven't seen a guy play like this in a really long time.
It's interesting that you bring that up about his mental game and the way that he plays it. I hadn't thought about it in those terms.
He's a cerebral player.
It absolutely is. And I do believe that he is mentally a superior player to Darrell Revis.
Yeah, 100%. And that's one of the things that if you're looking at all-time corners, if you're going just between him and Revis, you know, that's right. A long conversation.
Sure.
All-time corners. But that's what separates him from, I think, what has been considered some of the best corners. You know, Champ was a cerebral player for a long time, but Richard Sherman just got it all, man. I mean, he's got lateral quickness. That's what I'm going for. Yeah. You know, he's got all-out speed. He's got decent hands for a corner, but it's almost like he knows what's being run at him.
Right.
Every play.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like he's Miss Cleo out there, like, covering the receivers. Like, he knows what's coming his way.
He's fun to watch.
You know, the Seahawks defense, another thing that they did really, really well in this game is they held the Jacksonville Jaguars to 4 for 14 out of third downs, the 28%. That was super impressive to me. You know, just again, 265 net yards total for the Jaguars. A lot of those came in the second half against the twos.
When especially you're trying to run the clock out too. You're running the ball a little bit more, you know, Tarvis Jackson throwing dimes.
But if there's and of course the Jacksonville Jaguars are the weakest team in the entire NFL, and that's fine. Maybe even historically weak, but you know,
they're getting there.
The point being is that with that said, I really believe that this defense proved over this first 3 weeks of the season that it's not even close. They are the best defense in this league.
Well, and look at what you guys did to the 49ers. I mean, they were dejected after the first quarter of that game. You knew it. I remember sending Brandon a text during the middle of that game. I was like, wow, the rout has begun.
Yeah.
Let
me ask you this, Jared. Do you think that we totally broke the 49ers in that game?
I think we talked about that the other night. I mean, the 49ers are in shambles at this point, and I was like, I think that happened early when you guys beat them. I think you broke their will. I think they got a lot of things to work on. Now they're minus Alden Smith. Good luck, Niners. Kaepernick is not accurate anymore. For some reason, something happened to him during the Seahawks game where he's not hitting passes. During the Green Bay game, he could still hit a pass. Mm-hmm. He was overthrowing the ball this last week. I think that's because you guys just you threw the intimidation down on the 49ers last year. And I think that was fairly obvious. And at this point, they do not compete with you in this division.
No, I don't either. I do think they'll rebound a bit, though. I mean,
Of course. They have a lot of talent on that team still.
I would think so. You know, I think we actually broke their spirits a little bit. Really do.
And you were talking to me about the way they were before the game when they're on the Seahawks sideline, when they were just like, yeah, come on, guys, let's go, you know, not getting hyped up at all.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of that is because you can't hear shit down on the field probably when the crowd's screaming.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, part of you as a leader, especially for Kaepernick, you got to try to do something.
Yeah.
But they walked into the clink knowing it was over.
Yeah, exactly. No, I was just done. Skis.
Which most teams on offense do.
So, I mean, those were my big observations about the defense throughout the game. Super solid game, playing to our identity. I love it. You know, holding Chad Henne to a 45.4 quarterback rating. You know, that's everything you can do.
Yeah, and Russell played well, too. You guys were so efficient on offense against a bad team, which you should be.
Yeah.
You know, Russell had, what, like 200 yards, four touchdowns, something like that.
Yeah, that's exactly. 202 yards. Don't try to short him 2 yards.
Oh, yeah, that's what you did to me earlier, asshole. We're even.
Yeah, exactly. You know, ended up with a QB rating of 117.5. Russell played an excellent game. I think that his athleticism has even gotten better this year.
Well, he put some weight on his lower body.
You know, there's a couple different plays in that game that really stood out to me as far as Russell goes and his athleticism. And the first one would be the second touchdown pass to Zach Miller in the corner of the end zone where Zach just kind of stood there towards the edge of the end zone. But Russell boots out to his right a little bit. The defensive back comes up. I believe it was number 20. And Russell does like a pump fake 360 spin pirouette double Lutz sow cow. Like
it was pretty impressive.
I don't even know a figure skater that could do that. And like, you know, does that, zips around, still squirts out to the right, finds a wide open Zach Miller. I don't know that there's another guy in the NFL right now that can make that play.
I actually brought up the name Tony Romo because I've seen Tony Romo do it. But, I mean, I'm not comparing Tony Romo's athleticism with Russell Wilson. I remember watching when Trent Dilfer was talking about the Seahawks game. He goes, and Russell Wilson starts to roll out and he should have hit Zach Miller earlier, except he was doing this. Whoop! And then they showed him do that 360. It's like, yeah, he didn't hit him earlier because he was making moves and then making it rain.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was an impressive play. His athletic ability is not to be overlooked, and I think it's clearly stated at this point.
Yeah, I think Romo's the closest guy there.
He's the weasel,
but I don't think he could do that on a run. I don't think he can make that kind of pirouette on a run. He does that, like, standing still. Make a three. Right, but just doing that, like, pump fake while running 360.
Yeah, he's impressive.
That's stupid. You know, the second play that really stood out to me, and this was later in the third quarter, both tackles get beat by the defensive ends, and they're just
all the tackles.
And you know, the Jaguars are coming in, they're just going to tee off on Russell, and somehow he squirts through the two of them, kind of backs up, runs around him to the right side, ends up scrambling for 10 yards. Oh, it was at the end of the second quarter on that last drive. That probably our most impressive drive of the season. Yeah. And that was, again, another thing that other people just can't do that. There's just not another quarterback in the league that can.
No, and another thing that you got to take into consideration, that his center of gravity, his balance is better because he's so short.
Yeah, that's true.
No, but he's impressive, you know.
I won't argue that with you. I think that is a truism.
Well, and he's so stout. You know, he really is built like a brick shit house, but with the flexibility. You know, a lot. We talked about this a lot. Is his ability to throw when he runs off to the left hand mm-hmm. side? What game was that when he just threw that dart?
Oh, the Miami game last year. That was honestly, like, everybody's kind of gone through their favorite plays of Russell from last year, and that was my favorite play.
I haven't seen a quarterback throw with that kind of effective motion running to the left. I've never seen it happen.
I think
Vic can do it rolling off to the right because he's got that wrist flip.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Russell Wilson moving out to the left, I don't know if anybody, even Aaron Rodgers, can throw that effective running to their opposite side. He's just got that body control that you don't see in everybody, man. No. It's ridiculous almost.
The only other guy that I've seen that in, and this is something that made, you know, me bristle a little bit every time somebody brought it up, and I don't know why, was they bring up Tarkenton. And, you know, the one thing that kind of stood out, this last week I was bored here at home and ended up watching the bottom half of the NFL top 100 players of all time.
Okay.
And Tarkenton comes up on the screen. And you're just watching him play, and that's the guy. Like, that's the guy. I mean, they move and do everything almost exactly the same. And it always made me bristle when people, you know, talk about him compared to Tarkenton. I don't know why, because I don't know if you knew this, but when Tarkenton retired, he held every major passing record in the NFL.
Really? I did not know that, to be honest with you.
Went to 4 Super Bowls. He was kind
of
good.
He was pretty good. Probably one of the most overlooked quarterback.
Yes.
In NFL history, almost. I mean, you could argue that, but I think he's probably up there.
I agree. And I think Russell, you know, is that type of player. They'd only come around about once every 3 decades.
That, and I think one of the problems you guys are going to create for defense is also to go along with your own defense mm-hmm. and the asset that they are, is he's going to be so tough to defend because his ability to run a play action, his ability mm-hmm. to pass from the pocket, and to also throw rolling out to his left.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have seen how much of a debacle Colin Kaepernick is running out to his left. He can't do it at all. Peyton Manning can throw running out to his left better than that. Tom Brady can throw better than that running out to his left, and these are not athletic quarterbacks.
No.
So it's one more aspect defenses are going to have to try to defend.
Well, and that's the other thing that impressed me about our passing game in this game, because, you know, we struggled in the passing game in the previous matchup against the 49ers. You know, Russell was like 1 for 9 in the first half. But one thing that really stood out to me was the chemistry with the receivers. And the one throw that demonstrated that to me more than anyone else, and this is one that probably nobody else really noticed, but it was about 12 minutes ago in the second quarter. Jermaine Kearse runs about a 17-yard out off the left hash marks, and the DB's all over it.
Mm-hmm.
He's all over it. He's got him all covered up, and you could tell that this was a chemistry throw when it came out of Russell's hand.
Kind of a timing thing?
It was, because he ended up going like a little back shoulder. By the time the ball got there, Kearse had adjusted his route so much because he knew exactly where Russell was going to throw the ball that the DB wasn't even 2 yards within him.
And that's a really impressive thing, to kind of build that kind of chemistry with a rookie receiver, right? Mm-hmm. Is he a rookie?
No, this is his second year.
Second year, okay.
Second year, but he didn't play a ton last year.
Right, yeah. And this is one of the things that I think, I know that nobody is talking about, is this is a guy in the beginning of his second season.
Right.
That's it. I mean, if this was 10 years ago, mm-hmm. you didn't expect guys to be good till their, you know, third, fourth, fifth season.
Right.
We're still talking about a guy that is in, you know, this will be this next coming game will be his fourth game of his second season, mm-hmm. and he's already this good. So I, you know, there are going to be some throws that he might miss here and there. None of them are a concern.
No, this was an impressive stat to me, and it does combine a little bit of last year with this year, so it's a little bit of cherry picking. But I think it kind of
that's fine.
I think it kind of illustrates the point of when the light turned on for him, and when you look from week 9 of last year up until through week 3 of this year, the number one passer in the NFL is Russell Wilson via QB rating. You know who's number 2? Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's with this amazing start that he's had. So that shows you the level that Russell's just playing at.
And being how young he is, that is really impressive.
He's the number 3 passer in the league this season.
Yep.
As far as QB rating goes. And I like QB rating as far as how to judge quarterbacks. I think overall it generally does a pretty good job.
It's accurate enough to where it gives you a good idea as to how the player is playing.
I'd say 85% of the time the QB rating matches up to the eyeball test.
Right. Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah. So the timing that we've gotten with the passing game is really impressive. In another example, that was just some very subtle ways that they get this done. The very first touchdown that we score, Zach Miller, he goes and he fakes kind of a cut block, gets down, lies down on his back like a dead dog, mm-hmm. and then like pops back up, runs to the corner of the end zone. He's wide open. Russell, donk.
There's a lot of good tight ends that have used that, but it does take some athleticism to be able to pop back up and be aware of the ball.
Athleticism,
still,
timing.
Well, yeah, and you just said the timing. That's what I was going to get at is when you fall on the ground and get back up, that timing has to be very precise at the NFL level. So to know exactly when your tight end is going to be getting up and to make sure that he is actually himself is doing his job, it's more of an impressive play than I think people will give that credit to.
Yeah, it was really neat. The other thing, Sidney Rice, I think he's fully healthy now.
Safe to say.
5 catches, 79 yards, 2 touchdowns. Again, another example of that chemistry that I think they've built over this offseason. On that last drive of the second half, our best drive of the year, where we march, you know, 80 yards in 45 seconds. Sidney Rice is in the end zone. There's 2 guys there. Apparently, he looked at Russell and made a hand motion to kind of go up like Megatron did in that game last year. And Russell in his press conference said, hey, if you're calling for it, here you go.
He's going to let his players make plays.
It lets it fly, and Sidney goes up and gets it, you know, with that ridiculous catch range that he has. It was really great to see. So 2 touchdowns for Sidney. That was awesome.
Well, their chemistry will only get better as the year goes on, too.
Another guy that came through pretty well in the passing game was Luke Wilson. 5 catches for 76 yards.
You were a little hard on him early on in his rookie season. I was like, dude, you got to be a little – I firmly believe that you got to be patient with rookies.
Yeah.
You're ready to hang some guys sometimes. You're guilty of this. You know it.
I am. I don't have the greatest patience in the world. And, you know, the one
win
thing.
Win now.
Yeah. And, you know, since week 1, you know, he had a bad penalty in that first game. I think it was even on our first drive. But since then, Luke Wilson has played very solid for a rookie.
There's some adjusting to the NFL level.
He's at least as good as McCoy, Anthony McCoy. So you're not feeling that loss, you know, really hard. So that was great to see.
So he's playing well, too.
Well, Anthony McCoy tore his Achilles. He's not in the game.
Oh, no, McCoy. I'm thinking of McGrath, the dude who went to Kansas City.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He's sure-handed. Yeah, the Beard's playing good in KC.
Beard's playing good over there.
Yeah. You know, Doug Baldwin only had 1 catch in this game, but it was a 35-yard one-handed touchdown from T-Jack in the end zone. That was a sick catch.
That was one of the better catches I've seen in a while, for sure.
Yeah, that was really impressive. So the passing game, I'm really excited to see where that's coming along. The running game came alive a little bit in this game as well. Marshawn only had 69 yards in this, but he averaged over 4 yards a carry. You know, he came out early just as Russell did, you know, midway through the third quarter.
So you're feeling good about beating the Jags. Is that what you're getting at here?
I'm just saying that there was a lot of positives to take out of the game, a lot of things that we needed to get right about. Right. So you're right. Okay, that was enough about the Jags. Let's move on to Houston.
It's one of those games that you want to work on some things. You want to get your depth players some reps. So that was good to see also in these kind of games.
Yeah.
We had talked about that on an earlier podcast, how if you do build up a nice lead, it's good because you can get a lot of reps for a lot of players.
Yeah, exactly. So let's move on to Houston. Okay. I mean, yeah, because clearly your attention span has been totally used up when it comes to the game against the JV. So
are they even considered a JV at this point?
Well, I don't know.
B squad. All right.
B squad. Yeah. So good game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. We go down to Houston next week against the vaunted Houston Texans, who is actually number 2 in the league in total yards on defense.
You know, I was going to ask you about this because Houston is a good regular season team, just like Atlanta is. I think these two teams are very, very similar, yeah. And they make the most out of the talent they have, and they play relatively mistake-free, which will get you as far as you need to go in the regular season, but come playoff time, the tangibles aren't there in these kinds of teams.
No.
So with Houston, they haven't played very well yet this year. Are you at all worried that maybe this is finally the game where they start to put it together, or do you see a Houston team that's still not quite going to put it together, especially against an elite defense like yours?
In a word, no.
Okay.
And
wrong. Well, I was just curious. No, I don't really expect it either.
Well,
so.
Okay, number one, I'm not that high on Houston, and that's been documented on this pod.
Right.
I don't feel they're that great of a team. I think they're highly overrated, much like an Atlanta Falcons team.
Yeah.
I think they're, you know, one in the same. Just different conferences. But as far as the Texans go, you know, I said that they had the number two defense as far as total yards is allowed. That stat doesn't mean shit to me. Like I said earlier, they are tied for 24th when it comes to points allowed per game.
Yeah, and that's not very good.
That's pathetic. That's absolutely pathetic. And I watched that Houston and Baltimore game where
get a chance to see that one.
I had Houston picked in that game. How many offensive touchdowns do you think the Baltimore Ravens actually scored in that game?
Lay it on me.
One.
Ouch.
One fucking. They scored 30 points and they only scored one offensive touchdown.
Their offense didn't need to do shit.
Matt Schaub throws a pick six. They have a they have a run back of a is it kickoff or a punt return? Either one. You know, Ravens ended up being penalized a shit ton in that game, especially in the first half. In the Houston,
they're always penalized.
Well,
always.
The Houston Texans were even worse on that. They got penalized 14 times. For something like 120 odd some yards.
Well, it's no 21 or 22, whatever the Jets had this last week.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a whole different kind of dumpster fire. But the whole point being is that this team is not good. Tell me one guy other than JJ Watt, and I put a question mark after him because he barely did shit in this last game. One guy you fear off of that team.
You know, I guess the next guy in line
Reed,
would be Owen Daniels.
Yeah, and honestly, that's a good.
You know,
name
he's
to throw
a great possession receiving tight end. You know,
yeah.
But do I fear him against your guys' defense? No, I don't. No.
That was actually a good name to throw out because that was the one guy that I noticed when watching the game where they had some consistent success with Owen Daniels over the middle. They also ran a lot of short hitches, short slants, things like that when the Ravens played a lot of man coverage, but they played
right.
Way off. They played maybe 5-6 yards off of the receivers. We're not going to do that. Every time the Ravens went up and gave them some bump and run coverage and really jammed those receivers at the line of scrimmage, nothing doing.
Well, that and even if you guys play them deep, I think your linebackers are fast enough to get out into the flats and cover anything they're going to try and throw underneath outside.
Right, and our coverage on tight ends has gotten better.
Right.
Over the course of the season to this point.
Those are game time reps. That's one of those things where players get better at.
And honestly, when it all comes down to it, when I look at this, Matt Schaub, he's not bad. But you know what else he isn't? He's not good.
He's not that good. And you've been saying this for a long time. And, you know, I give these – I'm just always going to say Houston and Atlanta together because they're the same team to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're great regular season teams. They usually put together a bunch of wins. But you were talking to me earlier, like, it's not going to last. I remember you talking to me months ago about this. It's just, you know, you're not sold on either of these teams. And you're right, man. They're both tanking right now. I think
Everybody
knows how to defend these glorified mediocre quarterbacks.
Exactly. When you talk about mediocre quarterbacks, they were 3-for-12 on third down for 25% conversion.
That's not how you sustain a drive.
That's not going up against our defense. So when I look at this and I try to break it down quickly because we need to move on from Hawk Talk.
That's fine, man. You take as much time as you need.
Is you look at this, you go, their offense against our defense, that's a win for us.
Big time.
Our offense against their defense, that's a win for us.
Well, and earlier we mentioned, you know, if you guys do go to some kind of read option, there's no part of their Ed Reed is old. I think their only elite defensive player is JJ Watt, but he comes from the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead and flush Russell Wilson out.
Yeah, exactly.
Good and luck.
The only time Ed Reed's name was mentioned in that whole game was when he got hurdled.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, really. And
no Sean Moreno knows how to do that.
JJ Watt was on the left side of the line, I noticed, for the majority of the game. In fact, the Ravens actually singled him on the majority of the game as well. He only ended up with a sack and a half.
You know, his explosiveness where it was last year, and now where I saw him in the first two games of this mm-hmm. season, he doesn't seem like that explosive player he was.
And so if he's lining up on the left side for the majority of the game of the defensive line, that's against our right side. And if this Breno knee injury isn't as bad as maybe Danny O'Neill was saying from 710 ESPN Seattle,
right?
You know, our right side of the line is definitely a lot stronger than our left. I'll take my chances there all game long. Mm-hmm. I think that we keep J.J. Watt more or less contained. And not only that, but even if he is getting through, do you remember the Pro Bowl last year when J.J. Watt came slicing through and coming after Russell Wilson? He did one of those patented spins to his left.
Yeah, I did
see
that.
It made him look stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen all fucking day long. So.
Well, and if you're getting a nice pass rush up the middle, that's fine.
Yeah.
But against Russell Wilson, it's really not, because he can use his legs, and like we talked about just a minute ago, he can throw from either side.
Yeah.
And so, like you talked about, when it's their offense against your defense, your offense against their defense, this is just not a team that matches up with your guys' ability, really, as football players.
I don't think so. And even if it is on the road, 10 a.m. start, I feel fine about it.
Doesn't matter.
Jared, I think this is a win.
You guys are too good of a team to let this type of game go.
And even if it's a loss, I'm not worried.
No, and you wouldn't be, but I don't think you even have to worry about that. So Houston is still, just from what they were riding off the last couple of years, their good mm-hmm. regular season record, they're still considered one of those top AFC teams for some reason. And it's just not a game that matches up well.
No.
You got, your defense is too good. And one thing that I guess I was going to ask you, but it's a really stupid question, is they've been struggling all year. Do you think this is the game that they finally figured out? And I was like, that's dumb. Why would you all of a sudden figure it out against the Seattle defense? That's worst time to try and figure it out.
I like that you like thought while you were thinking and then like spit it out and said that it was stupid as you did it, because that was fucking stupid.
That's a dumb question.
They're not going to put it out there. That's almost like asking if Peyton Manning can play against an elite secondary.
It's just a bad matchup. You know, Houston, their offense cannot handle your guys' defense. Where is Schaub going to go with the football? Andre Johnson is hurt too, right?
Yeah, he has an injured shin. He's probably going to play, but even still, I mean, I'll put Brandon Browner on an injured Andre Johnson and then let Sherman take care of the rest. And
exactly.
Earl Thomas covering the middle.
Yep.
This is dumb. This is easy.
Nothing for you to worry about.
I mean, it's not easy. Every NFL game's tough, but mm-hmm. I don't know that they score more than 10 points in this game.
You know,
maybe 13. I'll put it to you this way. I think it's a 13-point victory for us.
Two score, yeah. That's mm-hmm. fairly accurate. Two score with the possibility of 3 or 4.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is a game where their defense has completely been exposed because mm-hmm. they're not that good.
Yeah.
Like you said earlier, they got one elite defensive player, and their offense is just struggling, man, and this is not a game where you go to figure it out.
And this is the type of game that if you're a Seattle Seahawks defense, if you are a team, you want to go ahead and prove that you're truly one of the top
teams
in this league.
There's a lot to play for in this game.
This is the type of game you win. And this is the type of
especially
game you
on
dominate.
The road. This will be a good road test. You know, they'll come to play. They're at home. They're hungry for a win. They've been struggling. And I think that's going to fire you guys up just as much as it
big
will
time.
Them. You got a lot to prove just because you want to prove that you are that elite defense. And I think this is where you're going to do it.
Big time. All right, folks. I think that does it for Chicken Scratch today.
All right.
We're going to come back here with the NFL segment. We're going to reveal the winners of the picks.
And we'll do some picks.
Yeah, and we'll do some picks as well. I'm going to put up, after week 4, the total pick winners through the first quarter of the season.
Which, my numbers are killer.
You're up on me by 4 picks over the course of 3
weeks. In week 3.
So you're basically like
the early lead.
One and a third better a week.
I'm creating distance.
You're creating something, a bunch of bullshit. All right. Stay tuned, folks. Listen to more of Jared's bullshit when it comes to the picks. Be right back. Welcome back, folks. Time for the NFL segment.
There we go.
What we're going to do today, we'll go over the picks from the last week just a little bit. Just the winner was Daisha, our friend Daisha Hartford.
Way to be.
I don't know the actual tally because, honestly, I was too lazy during the break to look it up. But what I am going to do is I'm going to go ahead and put those up on A Flock of Donkeys on Facebook. DONKIES, A Flock of Donkeys. Check it out on there. Do a little screenshot. It's a lot easier than us trying to fucking recite them. But the big thing between you and I, Jared, in our picks last week
is that I get to put
the cover
photo.
You got me by one because that fucking Miami-Atlanta game. That was the one. Because
I knew.
Atlanta leads the whole because
I
game.
Knew.
That's a fucking lucky bullshit. Goddamn
Dolphins.
No way,
dude. Miami beat Atlanta
in the last bit of
but
the game.
But that's a game I did watch.
Did you?
Miami beat them.
Well,
They're pretty good, that Miami team.
They are.
They're pretty good.
So, yeah, I mean, if you guys haven't already, check out the new cover photo. It's got Denver Broncos all over it.
Yep, so Jared got to, I puked a little in my own mouth just thinking about it right now. But what you guys need to
I'm going to leave it up this week.
Is get your picks in once again. I'll have that form up tomorrow on Thursday. These Thursday night games are fucking me on this because, like, we have to have these out so fucking early. But just if you get it in after Thursday, that's fine. Just be honest.
Yeah, you know what
we're gonna,
team
it's
you
a,
were going
to It's
gonna
an honor system. It's an honor system. So, Jared, what we're going to do quickly is let's reveal our top five teams in the NFL, one through five. What do you got?
I got Denver number one, Seattle number two. As we discussed earlier, those are the two elite teams in the NFL, so you could interchange those at any point this season, most likely. I'm sure you will, but I will go with Denver at number one for sure. Seattle number two. I got New Orleans number three because they haven't done anything to make me think that they are not number three. My two teams that have entered this are now Kansas City at number four and New England at number five.
Interesting.
What do you got?
Well, what I have is I have the best team in football at number one. That is the Seattle Seahawks because great D always trumps great offense. Number two.
It does not trump Peyton Manning.
We're going to find out in January when it's cold. So basically.
Really? You don't think a Denver team knows how to play in the cold? All right.
Let's
move on.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying an aerial attack in the cold and the wind is not proven to be super successful in a ground and pound situation.
I'm not as sold
defense.
On your defensive line as you are, but we'll move on.
No, it's the best in the league. So what we got here is number
Actually,
two,
it's not.
The Denver Broncos, who are an elite team in their own right.
The number one defensive rushing team.
One of the two best rushing or best teams in this league by a lot. We discussed that earlier in the pod. Yep. Number three, I also have the Saints of New Orleans.
That's fair.
Their defense has continued to shine.
And they're getting better.
They're getting better. We're still going to beat them badly when we play them at home later on in this season, but that's fine. You know, Drew Brees. He's looked as good as he can at this point. New Orleans Saints, number three. My number four team, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Unanimous. At number four.
The reason I put them up there is I think they might have the third best defense in this league.
I think they're pretty close. You know, they're a top five defense. I think they have the talent, and now they finally have the coaching staff to be able to put the talent in the right places. And I think with Andy Reid, their offense is only going to build more chemistry and get better.
That defense is stupid. So, number four, Kansas City Chiefs. My number five team is the team that will win the AFC East, and that is the Miami Dolphins.
That, you know, I can't really argue with that because Miami and Indianapolis were kind of on the outside bubble for me right now. And I put New England up there just because it's Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And I think that I see a New England team that is getting better. But Miami, man, that's a fair pick.
My thing with the New England team is that they feel like they're held together with rubber bands of scotch tape. Like they're so close to unraveling at the seams. I don't think you can sustain that for an entire year. And when I look at both Miami and Indianapolis, I think those are two teams that are more complete at this point, especially with the Indianapolis' beatdown of the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
It was between Miami and Indianapolis for me at this, and the reason I went with Miami is their defense is far superior, and I think their offense is about equal.
And Miami beat Indianapolis.
Well, and then there's that.
My thing about New England is that you see a team that's about to unravel. I see a team that is unraveled at their utmost at this point. Like, this is the lowest they will be.
They've peak lost unraveled?
Peak unraveledness. And so I think the unraveling has already happened. And to be able to maintain a 3-0 record and continue, like, I've watched every New England game at this point.
Buffalo, New York, and Tampa.
Exactly.
Which dumpster Tampa fire, has dumpster a decent fire, defense, dumpster though. Fire.
Tampa has a decent defense and a decent run game. They're a product of what their coaching is putting out. But like I said with New England, man, they have unraveled to their utmost at this point, but to be able
to
maintain a 3-0 record with all that they've gone through and what I've seen in their first three games, they are continuing to get better, especially on offense. I think that they can beat anybody else out there, especially the NFC team, so that's why I got them up there. And I think Tom Brady's only going to get better with his receivers. You definitely saw that in last game against a good defense. Tampa Bay's defense is not bad.
It's not good.
How many Tampa Bay games have you watched?
I've watched enough of Tampa Bay to know that they're a fucking dumpster fire.
They're a dumpster fire because they're a coach, but they have talent on defense, and they still play well, and they can still run the ball. And New England beat them very handily, and I think they're a better team
that
people are getting.
So many chemistry issues that is unraveling. With
well, look at who Miami has beat. Mm-hmm. Atlanta, Indianapolis, Cleveland. Atlanta and Cleveland suck balls.
Atlanta is mediocre, and they beat them.
They're not as good as New England.
I don't know about that.
I do. New England is 3-0, and I think it's for a reason.
I think that's a pretty even game if those guys played 50 games.
I don't, just because the AFC is better than the NFC.
Well, I know that's what the record shows to this point, but I think
that
in
New
England
is better.
Gonna, I think that's going to
I take Tom Brady and Belichick over the fucking mobster and Matt Ryan. I mean, but yeah, okay, we could argue this all day.
No, we could, and we might.
And
we
could.
Yeah.
But what we very easily could do that.
But what we're going to do instead is we're going to get to our week four picks, because we decided to do this a little differently. You've already made your picks. You've looked at the schedule already,
Jared. I made the
picks.
What you're going to do, and they're all correct.
You're
going to beat yours.
You're going to lay it on me, and I'm just going to shoot from the fucking
I'm going to lay it on you. We're going to leave that cover photo up the rest of the season.
Yeah, that ain't happening. So
I might switch the cover photo to the classic Broncos.
The next week's cover photo is going to be Russell Wilson in the Lotus position.
Whatever.
That's happening.
All right.
Mark it down.
Thursday night, San Francisco in St. Louis.
In St. Louis, no Patrick Willis. Colin Kaepernick is obviously regressed. Jim Harbaugh is losing control of this team. No Alden Smith. You know, the 49ers, not one receiver that can actually play. Anquan Boldin, you know, I mean, he's a great possession receiver, but I think people figured him out real quickly once Richard Sherman showed everybody how to do it. With all that said, St. Louis has looked fucking pathetic this entire fucking season. They're bumming me out.
They're
just not
a good team.
I don't think they're going to stop the run. And if San Francisco can run the ball a little bit in this game, I think that's going to be the key to this game. I believe that San Francisco wins this game.
Okay. I'm going to disagree just because of what happened last year. St. Louis played the division tough. They tied the 49ers and then beat them one. And without Patrick Willis, without any of the receivers for San Francisco, without Alden Smith, do they have any players to even play? No, I went with St. Louis. To me, it's just clear, and it's in St. Louis.
Haven't they impressed you?
No. The only team in the NFC West who has impressed me is the Seahawks. The other teams are just complete shit.
Yeah.
Holy crap. And this was supposed to be the best division in football, and it's looking to be one of the worst.
What happened?
I don't know.
I know. That's the exact right deal.
But
there.
They just suck. All right, next.
Baltimore in Buffalo. Okay, well, you look at this game. It's on the road, obviously, for the Ravens. Now, that's something that should concern you every time. But here's the thing. The Buffalo Bills are in complete and utter rebuild mode. E.J. Manuel has played fairly well, and the Bills have been competitive in a lot of games up to this point. But the Ravens, as much as I fucking hate them, as bad as they fucking are,
they're not that bad, and you need to admit it.
That's not true.
They're
not
Baltimore.
Good.
They're not as bad as
they're
you
not
think,
good.
Though.
The Houston Texans pretty much beat themselves in that last game. You guys beat them like a redheaded stepchild in week one.
But Baltimore
keeps
winning games.
I'm telling you, this team is not good. They are
You've been telling
good.
Me that, and then you started to question yourself last weekend.
Until I watched the game.
That's
fine. Just looking at the scores.
So who are you going with here?
I'm going with Baltimore.
All right, me too.
But they're not good. But Buffalo's real bad.
All right, Cincinnati and Cleveland.
Well, this is real easy because Cleveland decided that they're going for the first pick in the NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns select.
But they won't get it because Jacksonville will.
That's right. Cincinnati.
Okay. I went with Cincinnati, too, just because Brian Hoyer's getting his next start. No Trent Richardson. He was shipped off.
Yeah.
Cleveland sucks balls. Chicago and Detroit.
Ooh.
I'm not as sold on Chicago as everybody else is at
well,
this point.
Well, I'm not either. You know, the one thing is that Nate Burleson broke his arm trying to catch his pizza. I can relate to these sort of injuries. not that I've ever had that exact thing happen, but something similarly as clumsy, you know, that's in my MO. I don't know. I mean, Detroit's at home. I don't believe in this Bears team, but I believe their defense is still better than Detroit's defense. Detroit's back end is fucking terrible, and Brandon Marshall is going to have a fucking heyday, along with Jay Cutler, who is having a strong season for the first half of his season like he always does. This is the Chicago Bears.
I picked Chicago also, and there's a couple reasons. A, Jim Schwartz.
B, power of the Schwartz not there.
Yeah. B, the two wins that Detroit has are against the Vikings and the Redskins.
That tells you everything you need.
Their
and they
loss
lost against
is to Arizona.
Arizona.
So, yeah, this one is actually pretty easy. I went with Chicago because I think Detroit is that bad.
Okay.
Agreed. The Giants in Kansas City.
Kansas City.
Me too.
That's not even close. The New York Giants, this is a bad Eli year.
It is. It's one of those bad Eli
years. You know,
years.
Tom Coughlin does not lose three games in a row except for he does.
Except for he did, and he will lose four
badly
in a row.
It's done.
Yep.
And the Chiefs are really good.
Yeah. good defense, good all around. All right, Pittsburgh in Minnesota, across the pond, over in London.
Fuck.
I had an easier time with this one.
Is this this week's toilet bowl?
Yeah. It actually is.
It might be.
It is the toilet bowl, yeah.
You know, I look at this. The first thing that pops off to me is that the Minnesota Vikings have one A-plus player still on their roster, and that is Adrian Peterson. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, their defense is in shambles. Their offense is in shambles. Ben Roethlisberger is going to have to roofie a girl this week just to feel better about himself and probably take some English chicken to a bathroom. I believe that the Minnesota Vikings win this by 10 points.
You know, that's interesting because I actually went with Pittsburgh here because when I watched that game, I saw a Pittsburgh team that actually played good through the first half and then it all just fell away. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for the Vikings, I'm sorry. If you're going to lose in the States, you're going to lose in London, and those losses count the same.
No matter what continent you're
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I went with Pittsburgh just okay. because, you know, this is one of the – who really knows? But I just think Pittsburgh travels a million miles better than the Vikings do.
It sounds like Ponder might not play due to the bruised ribs. That makes them better. Matt Castle comes in, you know, equal dumpster fire. How they have not yet pulled the trigger on a trade for Josh Freeman. I don't care about the cap room. Make it work. Figure it out.
I have no idea.
Like, you got to make that happen.
Well, that leads us into our next game, Arizona in Tampa Bay. And be noted, Josh Freeman has been benched for a guy by the name of Mike Glennon, who you may be familiar with.
I am. Because
Russell Wilson's backup at North Carolina State.
For 2 years. That's exactly right. Congratulations on some great research there,
hey,
Jared.
Man.
I'm very impressed by you.
All right. Who do you got in this game? Arizona, Tampa Bay.
I figured I was going to drop Mike Glennon on you.
No way, dude. Oh. That's my stat.
Well done. Well done. I'm very impressed. Well, rookie quarterback, first start at home in the total debacle that is Tampa Bay. That is a team that is coming unraveled at the seams. Arizona, while they are not a great team, they will win this game just based on the fact that Carson Palmer can move the ball a little bit.
It'll be 9-3.
Yes.
I think Arizona?
Arizona.
Consensus. Okay, this is an easy one also. Indianapolis in Jacksonville.
I choose Jacksonville.
I'm not even going to let you write that down.
No.
I mean, you know, Andrew Luck is just playing awesome. No, okay.
Okay.
Let's move on.
All right.
Seattle-Houston, we already covered that.
Yep, Seattle.
Yep. Sorry, Houston, now is not the time to get your season started.
Whiff.
All right. Now we got the Jets in Tennessee.
Oh, this is Tennessee.
Okay.
Yeah, no, this is Tennessee. The New York Jets are not as good as their record show to this point. Geno Smith, while he may eventually be better than Jake Locker throughout the course of his career.
Maybe.
I don't think he's there yet. The New York Jets do not have a running game. The New York Jets do not have much of a defense.
Their defense is actually playing good.
It's okay.
Rex Ryan is a defense.
It's okay.
I mean, I think their defense is decent, but that was the only really thing that maybe even questioned this game a little bit.
But I think Tennessee has more weapons. I believe Tennessee in this game.
Yep. All right. You know, also, I think Tennessee, with the amount that Jake Locker actually ran the ball and the amount that he still cannot throw, I think they're going to revamp their offense a little bit and let him run a little bit more, maybe a little more read option. That's my prediction. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I think with the way that they saw him run the ball last time without taking big hits, they might let him run a little bit more. Maybe a couple of quarterback draws, too.
I'm almost inclined to believe you since you're wearing a Tennessee Titans colored T-shirt today.
It's not Titans color. It's different. It's brighter. It's actually offensively brighter.
It's a slight bit brighter, maybe.
Ugh.
Yeah.
All right.
No, but yeah, Tennessee.
Philadelphia in Denver.
Denver.
Washington in Oakland. This is a tough game, huh?
Well, first blush, maybe it seems like a tough game, but honestly, there comes a point as RG3 has gone through this season, every game he's improved steadily. And I think that knee gets a little healthier as you go. They have a dominant run game that they have leaned on throughout the season.
Mm-hmm.
Alfred Morris is a quality back.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Now, the biggest weakness for the Washington Redskins is their secondary. Terrell Pryor has shown that he is not an elite passer at this point. He can make some throws.
He can make some throws, though.
I mean, he's okay. But you should have mediocre stats against this. But honestly, I believe Brian Arakpo and Ryan Kerrigan keep Terrell Pryor contained as far as the running game goes most of the game, as well as Darren McFadden. I don't think Terrell Pryor can throw the ball well enough to beat a recovering RG3. I choose the Washington Redskins.
Okay. We differ here.
Good.
I went with Oakland for a couple of reasons.
It's an AFC West team and you're a
homer. No, that's not actually – I didn't even factor that into this one. One thing I thought about is a Washington defense that's one of the worst in the NFL. They can't stop a fly with a fly swatter in a fucking bucket. Mm-hmm. They can't do anything, man. Mm-hmm. They can't do shit. Mm-hmm. I think Pryor is actually going to have a good day running against them. I think McFadden's going to run all over him. Terrell Pryor?
Yeah.
Damn it.
It could be Matt Flynn. That changes the perspective a little bit, too.
Dude, Washington's so bad. I think Matt Flynn could be okay there, too.
Yeah, but their offensive line is so bad on Oakland. Like, it's going to be hard for Matt Flynn to be getting the ball off.
You know, another thing that I thought about was Washington's been playing like shit these first three games. They really have completely played like shit. I don't think they're going to travel all the way across the country
and figure it
finally
out.
Play well. You know, I don't think Oakland's a better team.
I think they've improved week to week, but I don't think they've played perfectly.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
If Pryor plays, I don't think, to me, there's no question. I think Oakland wins this game, but I forgot to even think about that shit.
I'm sorry I brought it up. I should have let you eat
that's
that
fine. I think Oakland's still going to win this game, even with Matt.
Okay,
Flynn.
Cool. So, all right. That'll
now
be
we
a
got
for me.
Dallas and San Diego.
Wow. This is an interesting game.
It is. This one was a tinker.
So, San Diego, they've been in a close game pretty much every single game.
Every week.
Every single game. Dallas, that's a team that Monty Kiffin has that defense playing a lot better. And Tony Romo is having a season for the ages so far. He's got the best completion percentage in the entire league, Tony Romo does. I think that Tony Romo, at the end of the day, is a superior quarterback to Phillip Rivers. I choose the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay. I went with San Diego just because I think their defense is playing more disciplined. And I think with Mike McCoy, I think they're a more polished offense. And Eddie Royal is going to play. And, man, Phillip Rivers has been using the shit out of Eddie Royal. Eddie Royal's really sparked that offense. And so I think San Diego just wins this game because they're at home. If they were in Dallas, I would have picked Dallas. Okay.
Well, you know, I don't feel great about this pick, but I'm taking Dallas.
I don't feel great about this game.
Yeah. No, I'll take Dallas, but I don't feel
all right. Good. We got New England and Atlanta.
Oh, good! Yeah! Yes!
There was a little foreshadowing, I'm not going to lie. I foreshadowed this in the beginning.
Well, based on all the statements that I made earlier, I got to take Atlanta.
You have
here.
To take Atlanta, and I cannot wait to see what happens in this game. You know, like I said, I think their chemistry is building. I think New England's a better team.
If this was in New England, I'd feel fucked on this pick.
It is in Atlanta, and it gets loud there, too.
That dome blows.
I hate
playing there.
I hate dome games.
I think I'm going with Matty Ice here.
Okay.
Even without the forever injured Steven Jackson, who apparently injured a hamstring on top of the thigh bruise that he had. He's going to be out an additional 1 to 2 weeks.
Just cut the leg off and retire, man.
Atlanta, you did not win the running back lottery. He's an old-ass running back.
Yeah. Okay, so the game that I am most intrigued about, Miami and New Orleans.
Is this a Sunday night game?
This is Monday night. New England in Atlanta, Sunday night.
This is in New Orleans, though.
This is in New Orleans. I thought about this one for a while.
So on paper, I would take the Miami defense over the New Orleans defense. But the way that they have been playing, they seem to be about equal. So that, to me, like, brings it down to the offensive side of the ball. And as well as Ryan Tannehill has played, holy cow, Drew Brees. Boy.
There you go with the Brees again.
Man, is he my new Carson Palmer?
He might be.
Drew Brees?
It's going to take a while to build up that Carson Palmer repertoire or reputation. Fuck it, dude.
Fuck it. That's a good word for you, too. So I believe that Drew Brees is going to go ahead and win this game at home. New Orleans is at home. If Miami is at home, I might take them. But this is a battle between the third and fifth.
Damn.
Oh, man. Brown ale kicking in.
We are struggling.
Third and fifth best teams in my power rankings going head-to-head. I believe the number three team will beat the number five team at home.
Okay. You know, I went with Miami here, and they both beat Atlanta. Both these teams have beat Atlanta.
Miami, huh? You're drinking that AFC Kool-Aid all
week. Hell yeah,
dude.
Hell yeah, because they're better. They're 11-3 against the NFC.
13-3, and I shouldn't even admit that to you.
Are they?
That's what I heard earlier today. I thought it was 11-3.
You know, I went through them again today, and I saw 11-3.
Okay, because I thought it was 11-3, too, and then I heard somewhere else 13-3, and I was like, was I fucking wrong?
Huh. Maybe I'll go through them again.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I look at Miami's wins, they both beat Atlanta. That's fair. But Miami also beat Indianapolis and Cleveland, fine. And New Orleans beat Arizona and Tampa Bay. So with the wins that they both had, they beat a similar team, and then they're both, But I think the Indy win for Miami was a little bit more impressive. And
because that was in Indy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going with Miami.
That's not a horrible pick.
You know, I can't wait to see this game, to be honest with you. This is going to be a good game
I'd
to
like
watch.
To tell you you're just fucking wrong and like lambaste you, but
I'd like to tell you you're wrong, which I usually can.
So how many picks did we differ on here, Jared? So okay. The first one we differed on.
The first one, Pittsburgh, Minnesota, that's two. Washington, Oakland, that's three. Dallas, San Diego, that's four. New England, Atlanta, that's five. Miami, New Orleans, that's six.
Another big week of disagreement. Yet we were only one pick apart last week after all those disagreements.
And the
games.
Cover photo is still the Broncos.
Well, next week it will not. You know, if you guys want to place a friendly wager with us or, you know, maybe a little dare or something along those
lines.
I'd be
more than happy.
Insert your picks on A Flock of Donkeys on Facebook. Use the form. Josh Kays, use the form that I put up there, okay?
Like it's easy as shit.
No, it's awesome. I love your emails because I love reading like the little things that that you have to say.
But
like,
you can put that stuff in with the comments. Isn't there a comment section down there?
There will be this week then.
Perfect.
So yeah,
but not to make you do stuff.
But yeah, I just have to like go back and put people's picks in on the form just so that it ends up on the spreadsheet. So go ahead and get them in there. Dan Hill, you had the creative bet of the coconut milk. I'm looking at you, man. Like, come up with something good again for this week.
Let's do it.
You had an abysmal week this last week, and you'll see that when I put up the picks.
Pretty bad, man.
But I not mean, as bad as Leah, our friend Leah, who had three picks completely correct. Or maybe it was more after the Chicago win.
Yeah, I totally lost track of her picks after the morning games. It's like, that's abysmal.
Yeah, but it was. It might have been the worst week that anybody's had to this point.
Yep.
But which is fine, because everybody gets to throw out their bottom 2 weeks when it's all said and done.
Makes it more competitive.
So again, get on A Flock of Donkeys, D-O-N-K-I-E-S, on Facebook. Insert those picks. And go from there. Jared, I think that's everything I
got
to say
about
the NFL this week. Oh, you
got
one more?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I got to give you a lot of credit for putting this whole podcast together. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a complete tech-tard. I'm a digitard. I have nothing to do with this. I literally sit here.
I don't do
I
much.
Talk Broncos stuff, and then we do the NFL segment. That's all I do. Adam's been putting this whole thing together. The picks just line it up. So kudos to you, man.
Well,
way to go.
Thanks, dude.
It's coming together pretty well. I like the format. It's good.
I appreciate
like
that. I would like to say it was really difficult, and I do a lot. But honestly,
it's a lot more than I know how to do.
But we're getting it done, and I feel like the products come together well, and it's been really fun to do. And so on that level, I will give you some mad props. I could not do this without an excellent co-host. And
all right. Thanks, man.
It's been a lot of fun to this point.
It has been fun.
Until it won't be anymore.
And we're getting some good feedback from everybody, so keep that coming. You know, with your picks, write some comments, give us, you know, we'll talk about all this stuff.
Yes.
Anything you want us to mention or talk.
So Jared, let's get this done. So whether it's in John Elway
or John Schneider,
or John Schneider, the two Johns
in Johns we trust.